Hey folks, I'm Alex Dowd.
And I'm Katie Reif.
This week on the show, we talked a little bit about movie theaters and about some of our favorite experiences with movie theaters. Obviously, none of us can go to them right now because of the pandemic. And we just sort of nostalgically looked back on our own personal history of going to the movies. And I think one thing that, Katie, you and I have in common is that we both love the Music Box Theater here in Chicago.
Yeah, one of my favorite. I've been to many theaters all over the country, and the Music Box is one of the best.
Absolutely. It's sort of Chicago's premier art house movie theater. It was built in 1929, and over the years, it's kind of maintained the, I would say, both the look and the ambiance of an old school movie palace.
Yeah, it's continuously operated ever since, I believe.
Yep. There's an organ player. Who will play sometimes on the weekends for the full effect. The theater has two auditoriums. There's a big one and a small one. If you're in Chicago, I have to imagine you know of the Music Box, but for those who do not live in the city, it's a pretty big deal for movie going here in the city. The programming includes contemporary art house fare, but also classic films. They'll do revivals of various touchstones of classic cinema, as well as midnight screenings. The Room has become a popular reoccurring midnight screening at the Music Box.
And they're also known, one of their signatures is they have 70 millimeter facilities. The facilities there for showing, they're very committed to celluloid at the Music Box. And one of their biggest series is the 70 millimeter film festival, which happens every year where they show films in that most spectacular formats.
That's right. I actually consider seeing 2001 on 70 millimeter there one of the great movie going experiences of my life, actually.
And I should add, for full disclosure purposes, that I have worked with the Music Box on quite a few events. I'm working with them on a film festival currently postponed TBD called Cinepocalypse. And last year, I helped host their 24 hours of horror movie marathon.
Right on. Thank you for mentioning that.
You should probably mention it.
Yeah. We should also mention that we're actually here today because we have the distinct pleasure of speaking to a special guest, Ryan Oestreich. He's the general manager of the Music Box Theater. Thank you so much for joining us today, Ryan. How you doing?
Great. I'm excited to be on your show. I know it's coming from my own home, but what the hell? It's nice to talk to the two of you and be on this podcast.
How are you holding up in quarantine?
Well, I don't know if it's fortunate or unfortunate, but I have two small children, so okay. The idea of quarantine, it doesn't mean anything. I mean, these kids don't know what's going on in the outside world, so they have to be cared for. Yeah. So, you know, I'm spending a lot more time with my kids, which is, one of them's at a fun age, so I
say that. Are you brushing up on the current state of children's entertainment right now? Are you all up on the latest shows?
I know a few, and I don't want to talk about them because they're not. I don't like them. they have these earworms that you find yourself doing the dishes and singing, and you're like, why the hell is this child's song in my head? But honestly, one thing that's fun right now is I read a lot of books to my 3-year-old, and she's memorizing the words, and so like we're like. We're kind of rereading these books without the pages, and she's like, you know, kind of orating things to me, and I'm like, oh wow, you're a pretty good storyteller. So that's a fun little discovery that I've made in quarantine.
That's really cool. Fun. Yeah.
Ryan, so how long have you been the general manager of the Music Box?
Over 5 years now, surprisingly. I don't know. Wow. Is that surprisingly? I started in 2015.
And before that, you were in, I believe, Denver, Colorado? Is that correct?
Yeah, before that, I was in Denver for 4 years. I was running the C Film Center, which is like the Music Box equivalent, but like a newer venue that also has a big film festival, and as well as does like outdoor screenings and films at Red Rocks. And then before that, I was 4 years in Minneapolis running the Minneapolis St. Paul Film Society, which is, they got a big film festival there and a year-round Cinematheque. So been in the business for a while. And then, yeah, I'll admit, before that, I figured it all out at an AMC movie theater, which was an experience in itself. And after 2 years, I got the hell out of corporate movie theaters. Not to say that they shouldn't exist. It's just it wasn't for me.
How is it different?
Oh. okay, best analogy that I think I've heard somebody say is AMCs and Regals and those big chains, they're in the business of selling popcorn, whereas art house movie theaters are in the business of showing movies. And community.
Dowd, you were a movie theater employee back in your teenage, young adult years, right?
For several years, I worked. Yeah. I worked at a big multiplex in Michigan growing up as a teenager. I also worked at the closed Three Penny very briefly in Chicago. Is now Lincoln Hall, actually. It's now a music venue. And I worked for a little while at the Landmark Century Center.
Oh, wow. That's fun. I was always a video store person. So this is, I'm kind of the other branch of <That's right. laughs> minimum wage movie jobs.
But the free movies, we all had one thing that all in common, free movies.
Yes,
that's
and
right.
Honestly, that's probably why we all started. Can I say that? Can I put that out there?
Because 100%.
I definitely did.
No question. Yeah.
No, the video store was my second film school because I was making minimum wage at the time, and so I didn't have any money, but I had unlimited free rentals, so I would watch 3 and 4 movies a day sometimes. I watched so many movies back then.
So I want to talk a little bit about this strange time that we're living through and what it means for you and for the business, and specifically for the Music Box. For those who don't know, the Music Box, like virtually every other, I actually think we could probably safely say every movie theater in the country is closed, right? Now, do you remember the date that the Music Box announced that you'd be closing?
Yeah, we announced on March 18th.
So that was.
But we had been dealing with changes in the business before March 18th.
Like what?
And I'm sorry, I got my dates wrong. It was we announced we'd be closing on March 16th, but that the actual close started that night. So it was technically we closed March 17th. But we had started to announce things to people regarding changes in capacity and cleaning measures and asks of our customers to be smart. Not come in if you're sick, back on Thursday, March 12th.
So, was there one thing that made you go, oh, wow, I think we're going to have to close the theater? Or was it just sort of a slow creep?
It was a slow creep because watching what our peers were doing and what other state governments were doing, we kind of knew that there were some things that were going to happen. And so we were sort of preparing. We actually started preparing for things that we could do to sort of so just keep a cleanlier atmosphere back on March 2nd. But that doesn't really matter as much as what happened was the week of March 9th. That's when everything kind of ramped up because, there were film festivals that were going to start to cancel or canceling or postponing. There were big events that were going to did. There was talk of more closures and cancellations that week. And then on that Thursday, the governor got on and he said no events over 1,000 will be allowed, but he's recommending no events over 250 happen. And so basically it was like I'm not going to force you movie theaters to have less than 250 seats. To have no more than 250 people in your seats. But I'm asking you because, hey, it would be responsible of you to do that. And so we kind of knew these things were coming. And so that's why on that Thursday, we put into a policy of limiting seating capacity to 250 or less in our main theater. And then we halved our capacity in our small house because the governor said what they said, as well as seeing what all of our other sort of peers were doing. And I mean peers in the sense of like other art house movie theaters, because that's kind of how we see ourselves. We wouldn't think of ourselves as an AMC, all right? AMC wasn't really doing anything in this time of March 12th. So we did that. And then those next 72 hours, I was glued to my phone, to the internet, to the TV, because it just kept getting worse, because that was the weekend that everybody in Chicago went out and celebrated St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
And so basically you could tell that they were about to shut things down further. And so before they shut us down with a mandate that could have been like enforceable with a fine and police, on that Monday we announced that we would close voluntarily that night, that today's showtimes on Monday, March 16th would be the last, and that starting on Tuesday, March 17th, we would close. And we announced that in that time we would go until April 3rd, because that seemed like to go beyond what the mandate was going towards, which was March 31st. And then the mandate came and they closed down all of the restaurants and everything and any gatherings of more than 50 people, which closing us down and not letting us have more than 50 people in the Music Box is just, that doesn't work financially. It's not a business. So it couldn't work. So then, and then the mandate came and then it was like, okay, well, we were already closed. So it's okay. We're sort of following things, but that 72 hours, I mean, all of March, honestly, I was addicted to my phone and watching what everything was happening, because I just had this feeling in my stomach that more and more was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And sadly, it did.
Mm-hmm.
What were those days like before that decision was made? Those days when clearly there were less people coming, both by law and by, I think, people's general anxiety about what was happening. What was it like to run a movie theater where, I mean, you probably had less than half capacity all day, every day, right?
Yeah, it was, oh man, it got weirder and weirder. Like, Monday night was super strange because, you know, we showed Life Force to 42 people. strange yeah. group of people too, like a mixed bag of people that kind of knew they wouldn't get to see a movie again for a while, with other people who just were either not really aware of things or didn't care. But over that weekend, basically, it was this strange dichotomy of moviegoers, because what we had was, in our main theater, we had our 70 millimeter film festival, which is our most popular and one of our best attended events, and it's always just packed with people, 400 or 500 a screening on average, you know. Mm-hmm. sometimes they sell out. And so what we saw on that Friday was this, like, you know, what we expected we'd see with attendance, and it was like half of that. Each show was like on Friday was like a half, and then on Saturday it was like maybe a third, and on Sunday it was like a quarter.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then on Monday it was like a fifth or less, probably less. And basically what you saw with the audiences is they got you this. I don't know how this is going to come off, but a lot of old people were still coming out, who were like the most at risk, vulnerable. And we were like, we weren't like saying to them, hey, do you know what's going on? Because it seemed like they knew what was going on. Like, nobody was wearing masks or coming in with that. They were still coming in. They were social distancing from each other. You could tell that they were sitting apart from one another. And they were definitely buying a lot less concessions because they wanted less interaction. But there were still a lot of old people coming in and seeing movies. And then we had, you know, a fair amount of young people. But that was what's going on in our main theater with our 70 millimeter. In the small house, we had this beautiful art house film, Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Mm-hmm.
So that film was doing very good business for us, and it was actually selling out our small house on the weekends. That film just dissolved. Like, I mean, huh. I'm talking, we were having an average of 40 to 50 people a screening. It went down to 5.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. It just completely bottomed out.
Yeah. So the people that were coming for Portrait of Lady on Fire, they're just like, no, I don't need to go see it. I'm not coming. Or they were more concerned with the coronavirus than the people that were coming for 70 millimeter.
Yeah, I think it kind of does say something about demographics, and it might say something also to, you know, Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Even if you're the type of person who prefers to see a movie in a theater, you could say, well, maybe I can see that on streaming in a few months, but a 70 millimeter is a uniquely cinematic experience. So if you want to do that, you have to go out. You can't just hang on a little bit and you'll get 70 millimeter in your house.
True. Yeah. So that probably definitely explains why we saw a lot more for 70. But it got kind of eerie after a while over the weekend. Mm-hmm. Like, everything was kind of quiet. Like, you know, when you're in a film festival environment, and even though a 70 millimeter film festival is different than a regular film festival, there's still a lot of camaraderie. There's still a lot of people talking, hanging out in the lounge, really excited and enthused about the movies that they've seen, whether they've seen it for the first time or the 50th time. On Sunday, that day in itself was just so quiet. There were still people seeing movies, but they just weren't talking. Hmm. It was like, a lobby should have chatter, and yeah, our lobby had no chatter. And it was like eerie, and it was like making the staff feel weird about things. It was a strange environment.
And you said no one was buying concessions? That's interesting.
A lot less. I wouldn't say no one, but like, there's this thing called per head, which is like a measurement of how much people spend per average when they come to a movie theater. And, you know, you use it to figure out how well your business is doing. And our per head was like half of what it should have been.
I have to imagine that even if the order had not come that you guys had to close, or even if you were technically able to stay open, you might have difficulty doing that, because I have to imagine distributors were, I mean, what we were seeing over the course of that month, or those couple of weeks, was a lot of gun-shy distributors moving their titles. And I assume that applies even to the sort of art house field as well.
Yeah, so we did start to, it wasn't in the moment. Like Neon wasn't calling us and telling us to please, that they wanted to pull Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Neon is the distributor for that one. But it was looking ahead. So like, you know, A20, we were going to work with A24 on this horror movie called Saint Maud, And we had worked with them to do a preview screening for our members. It was like the end of March. Or it was like in five. It was like in 10 days from whenever things started happening. And the filmmaker was coming out. And A24 called us and they pulled that. And they said, she's not coming, the filmmaker, and you can't do the screening. And you know, and because they wanted to be a responsible, ethical company, and we didn't really have, there was no backlash on our end. But then I said to them, I said, wait a minute, are you going to do something with your April release of this movie as well? And they said, we don't know yet. And then a couple of days later, they pulled their April release of the movie. So, yes, distributors started to react. At least the art house distributors were starting to react and say, like, we're just going to pull our movie. So, like, you might not have product to play.
And you're head of programming at the Music Box. So, I am kind of curious about, in general, what that process is like. Do you reach out? Do you sort of look at the calendar, see what's coming, what's sort of planning releases in across multiple markets, and say, yes, that's something that would be perfect for us? Do distributors reach out to you? How does that relationship work?
Well, you got to imagine distributors try to be salespeople. You know, they solicit you. So, you know, every distributor in the world is going to reach out. Not every distributor, I'm sorry. All the distributors who want the art house play are going to reach out and say, take our product. And so you're sort of managing a lot of requests, but then you have certain ones that you want to get that maybe is not being offered to you. You know, sometimes there's like, you know, films from A24 or Neon that, you know, they might not be thinking specifically an art house release. They might be thinking a little bit wider. And so you say, hey, no, if you're going to go wider, we can play with a couple other theaters and still do some really good business for you, because, you know, to some degree, we try to be curatorial in our choices of what we put on the screen. So basically, we kind of have this really big calendar worksheet document where we put down everything that's kind of opening by week. And it says, like, we kind of keep a track of when it's opening New York and LA, and then when it's going to expand from then. And then we just basically build a jigsaw puzzle based on what we think the best pieces are. And we lay them out week by week by, you know, what film can open in the main theater, or what film can open in theater two, or what film can hold in theater two after it opened the big house. So we have this massive list of films to choose from. Maybe it's not massive, but, you know, that we could choose from 10 to 15 films every single week to play. And we don't, because we don't have the space for it. And so you just have this sort of ongoing document that's both things that you solicit and things that are kind of offered to you. And then you basically figure out what you like the best for your audiences. And it's a mixture of you as a programmer who's like, I really believe in this film and I think people are going to love it, as well as you knowing your audience and saying, I don't know that I like this film a lot, but I know my audiences just love this stuff. And so you're like, I got to play it. And then there's times where you kind of are wrapped up in the fervor or the good press or like the marketing for a film that you might be a little bit more on the edge about, but you're willing to take a chance on it and experiment a little bit. So that's kind of how theatrical works. And then we do a lot of one-off programming, midnights, matinees, repertory. And so what we do there is, you know, we just, again, we have another giant document of films and ideas. And then every Wednesday we have these weekly programming meetings that can go anywhere between like an hour to an hour and a half. And we just kind of go through everything. And programming is by committee to some degree. You know, our membership manager, our technical director, our marketing manager, our publicist, we all sit in on the programmings, and we all talk through what we want to do and kind of weigh in, especially like kind of repertory and stuff like that. And then I've also created a committee for the staff. And so staff can make suggestions and I can bring them into the programming meetings. And staff have actually, they're creative and they're great. Some of them are great cinephiles and have taste. Mm-hmm. And so you could see sometimes where a staff member has programmed a movie at the Music Box.
And something that you guys do that I think is cool is sometimes, especially I have experience with this in the midnights, you will, you know, bring in kind of local cinephile types, I suppose, to help program series there. That's one of the things that you guys do that's real cool, like the Noir Festival that you do. That's an outside programmer, right?
Yeah, so we know that we don't know every type of movie, and we know that there are a lot of other audiences and people who have connections and ways of outreach to those audiences. So like Film Noir or Noir City Chicago, which is a film noir film festival, there's these two people in San Francisco that run the Film Noir Foundation, and they basically restore old film, like lost film noir movies, and then they come in and they help us program a film noir festival, which we, that's collaborative, mostly their suggestions, and then they host the thing. They literally live at the theater for an entire week, these two guys, and they just geek out over noir movies for just be careful. They'll talk to you forever. They'll just sit in the lounge and you'll be having drinks with them and it'll be like 2 a.m. And you'll be like, how the hell did we talk about that singular film noir movie till like 4 a.m., but we did. So yeah, we do a lot of collaborations, sometimes straight up partnerships, sometimes where we just, you know, hire somebody to do the programming, or sometimes it's like it's a group, like a local group, like let's say the, you know, Odd Obsession, which is a very well-known Chicago rental store, where they're like, hey, we have a really great idea on a program and we think we can bring our audience out. And I'll be like, well, maybe I could bring some of the Music Box audience, but some of mine plus some of yours together could make a good audience. Mm-hmm. And then you end up creating a great event. So, you know, you just, it's like how I want to listen to my staff. I really love working and collaborating with other groups because they really know other subsections and subgenres of movies, and when they're extremely knowledgeable and can bring their personalities and the willingness and interest to engage with customers, it makes the world of difference, because the movie theaters can be communal and should be communal to some degree. It's like a church, you know. We should be able to discuss and have a conversation and be lively, and sometimes you find the right partner, and that's exactly what you get with, you know, how they present a movie.
Yeah.
Ryan, do you have any real notion or timetable about when the theater might be able to reopen?
Oh, you want the candid?
if you're comfortable sharing it, sure.
I would say most people should expect some level of reopening late May, early June of movie theaters in general. And I think when that happens, the programming that they're going to find in those movie theaters is going to be all over the place, because it's probably not going to be studio content.
Right.
And if anybody's looking for any semblance of reality or a return to norm, so like even in your profession, like what am I going to be reviewing that's going to hit movie theaters? I think we have to wait until probably the second week of July for that first big new Hollywood content, Hollywood studio produced movie to be released, or maybe the third week of July. But I do think movie theaters, including the Music Box, are going to be open before that. It's just, we're going to be sort of not relearning. It's going to be kind of ramping back into the sort of coming back to form. In the sense of getting people's, you know, comfort and security and understanding of how the movies work now in this COVID-19 world. I call it the fucking upside down world because that's where I feel like I'm living. I'm trapped in it.
Yeah.
But I do think movie theaters are going to be back before major studios are releasing their films. And I think the Music Box, I foresee the Music Box reopening in late May, early June.
So, and when you do reopen, I imagine that at least at first you'll need to have the social distancing guidelines that you had sort of when you were, I suppose, stealing for closure. What kind of policies did you have? And are you expecting to do those again when you reopen?
Absolutely, and probably more. So the policies we had in place was, you know, basically no staff could come in when they're sick, just period, that we have sick time for our staff so they know to use it. I was forcing everybody to basically kind of take a like sanitizer, wipe down their phones the minute they walked in the door, wash their hands immediately, and basically kind of practice all of those things. We had a ramp up of sanitizing all frequently touched counters and spaces and doorknobs and everything, basically pretty much every half hour. So I would keep that going. We would reduce capacity. So our main house is like 700 seats and I wouldn't sell more than 250 to any show. Our small house is 70 seats. So I'd probably cap that at like 30 seats. I would probably literally close off sections of seats and seats themselves with tape or signs. And then most likely find some way to add extra intermission between show times so that I could go in there and wipe down seats. So that I would give... you know, I would give that ability to, you know, kind of, if there was anything left on the seats, have killed it, or wiped it off. And, definitely keep in place what we had, which was, we weren't using any glassware in our lounge. We were doing no refills. We basically weren't touching anything from anybody that they had already touched, keeping one person on the drawer and one person, you know, kind of running and grabbing the food. So basically there was no way for any of the food handling to be touched by anybody from the outside public.
Okay.
I think those are the main points. I wasn't going to require any mask wearing. I don't really like the optics of that. That just doesn't feel right to me. And I think those are all the main things I think I was talking about. A lot of the things I had already been doing, and then some of the extra things that I'd probably put into place, mm-hmm. which sounds like a lot, and it makes you wonder why do it, but I think it's worth doing.
Yeah.
I don't think any sensible person would question doing any of this, you know?
Yeah, honestly, sanitizing the counters is not excessive in any way.
Right. And it's not to say like we weren't doing those things in general. We cleaned down counters and things, but now the idea would be like, no, let's make sure we have a bleach, you know, something with bleach. Let's do it every half hour, you know, and mm-hmm. let's hit all the door handles and things. Like, you know, we didn't normally do the door handles, the doorknobs right. and all that sort of stuff. So,
right.
So it's kind of been sort of generally understood that it's a hard time for movie theaters in general right now, this certainly can't help. What do you see as the long-term effects of this for the industry, if you have any thoughts on that?
Very good question. I do want to dispel a little bit of your first part. So ticket sales have been down, and that's like an industry-wide thing, but the art house movie theaters have actually been doing quite well. And if anything, they've been growing their attendance. And I don't mean to say just Music Box. I'm a part of something called the Art House Convergence. And it's a hodgepodge kind of group that it's like not like a fee-based thing. We don't pay to be a part of it. It's just like we all get together and share ideas and make each other stronger by, you know, communicating and whatnot. And they're doing very well, too, in this world order. Not in the world order of COVID, but pre-COVID. The big chains and things who are basically dependent on Hollywood, they're the ones that have seen a roller coaster of ticket sales based on how good the content is that's coming out. People like the Music Box, who basically have a better understanding of who their audience is and building community and really programming for that, have actually been doing okay, if not growing. I would say in the 5 years that I've been here at the Music Box, we've been growing, and before that I knew that they were growing before I took over. Now, how the hell is it gonna I don't know what you ask a really good question on what it's gonna be like when we reopen and what are people's attitudes gonna be like in that, what I'm gonna call in the pre-vaccine COVID-19 world. That's what I'm calling it, because I think when the vaccine hits and when everybody has the vaccine in 2021, I think it's going to be different than what it's like until we get there. And so I think it's going to be a roller coaster as well of consumer confidence in their, and how comfortable they feel about going out in the world in general, and then how do they feel about going into enclosed spaces. Because the movie theaters are not alone in who's going to be affected by this. I mean, think about museums. Think about like children's museums that are like interactive play areas, right? Think about all of those spaces that are even maybe a little bit more interactive than just sitting in your seat being away from people. I honestly feel like there's going to be, you know, I don't have any real data on this, but like a 25-30% return from the people that just love going to the movies and are going to do it safely and feel comfortable going to the movies again, right? And I think we're going to see them right away. I think they're going to be there ready to go back to the movies when we say we will reopen. They will be there that weekend. And I think they'll be with us for some amount of time, or maybe through all of that roller coaster, depending on how they're doing and how financially the world is and all that sort of stuff. However, what's going on with that 75-70% of moviegoers? How are they feeling? How quickly do they return? And that is the real question mark. And I don't know that anybody who can really answer that right now. If you want my opinion, I think that we are going to slowly build them back up to where maybe we get back to 100% before the vaccine is around. But I don't know that we're going to get to 100% of them. And the reality here is less. If we think that this is damaged movie going in for the long term, and I mean beyond 2021, the damage that will have been done is because of people's just disinterest in going to the movies maybe not as much as they're thinking that the movies are an insecure or unhealthy environment.
You mean that, like, people who are ambivalent about the experience in general might, you know, just stop going to the movies entirely? But yeah. But again, that seems like something that would affect, you know, multiplexes more than it would a place like the Music Box. You know, when you were talking about knowing your audience, I was like, oh, you mean the entire world doesn't all want to see the same movie on the same day? Color me shocked. You know, tell Disney that, but that's another topic, I suppose.
So I guess if you're reading into what I'm saying, and so I'll kind of say it differently, I worry about the chains, mm-hmm. and I worry about the people that are only dependent on studio content for the studios to bring people into their theaters and for that level of ambivalence that's already there.
Yeah.
So I'm not a doom and gloom here. I think the Music Box is going to survive. I think there's a lot of movie theaters who know who they are and they know who their audience is who are going to survive. But if you look at the trades, AMC and Regal are very vulnerable. Mm-hmm. You really honestly could see a bankruptcy on both of their parts, and then a long time before they come through the bankruptcy. And when they come through the bankruptcy, they'll come back at maybe 50% of their locations or 60% of their locations or 75% of their locations. And you're going to see a reduction of movie screens across the country if this is truly a long-term effect that truly does hurt the business.
Well, it reminds me of one thing in a way that I think that perhaps the smaller art house movie theaters are supporting each other in ways that the studios and the chains are not. You know, the studios are shortening their theatrical windows and putting movies like, you know, we reviewed Bloodshot on the way back last week. They're putting those out on VOD a lot quicker. Unrelated, you know, none of that goes to the AMC that normally would have gotten a cut of your ticket to go see Bloodshot. But the Music Box is participating in this, and I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about it. There are online screenings that are directly linked to art house theaters that you can watch online, and those directly benefit the theater.
Yeah, so this has been what you just said was the war that's been going on between the studios and the movie theaters, and what you saw happen there with Universal specifically, I would say, was the big kind of middle finger to say, we're just going to do whatever we got to do to survive. We don't care if you do. Not all of your studio is doing it that way, but Universal definitely came out pretty strong with that middle finger. And I'm not saying Universal should or shouldn't have. They have a business to run. But yes, the art houses are different. And what we're doing is something called virtual cinema, or like a virtual screening room, where we have a symbiotic relationship where we really want to make sure our independent distributors, our A24s, our Neons, our smaller distributors, our Kinos, our Oscilloscope Laboratories, our Film Movements, all these people survive this. And they want us to survive as well. So we need to figure out some way that we can make it work for both. So Kino was the first to jump out and do this. And a lot of other people came on board to do it after, where it was, let's build a specific landing page that has your logo, your Music Box Theater, where you can send this link to your members and your customers. And if they rent this movie for $12, which was the price of a ticket, we'll give you 50% of it, which basically means we're going to get 50% of that box office, the distributor, which is going to help us, and you're going to get 50%, which is going to help you while you're closed, so that you at least some income coming in the door. And that's a huge paradigm shift for how this relationship works currently. Mm-hmm. However, it's throwing like a life raft out there. I mean, it's fantastic because it's basically, we know we both want each other to weather this storm. We both know we need each other to some degree. And so we're realizing that right away, and we're acting as quickly as we can to help one another. And it's fantastic because it keeps us engaged with our audience, because we can program 1, 2, 3, 4 movies a weekend, send it to people and say, these movies we think you'll like. These are really good. We would have played them at the Music Box anyway. So watch them, support us while we're closed, while you're stuck at home, and still get good cinema out of it. And know that you're not only supporting us, you're supporting these indie distributors, and you're supporting the independent ecosystem. Because you want the distributors to stick around, because they're the ones buying the independent movies that are at the film festivals that you're hearing about, right? And so that ecosystem needs to support one another. And I think what we saw and what we've been part of has just been uplifting. I'll say that. It's been really good for my morale.
So how do you program a virtual movie theater? Is it similar to programming a flesh and blood movie theater?
Well, we were on autopilot at the first couple of weeks because we had all these movies that we had already planned to play at the Music Box. Uh-huh. So when they told us that they were going virtual, we just said, okay, we'll move you over to virtual. However, now we're in the Wild West where we are off our schedule or our calendar and we don't know what to program, but we have these people saying this film is now available on virtual. So now we kind of have to wait for the distributors to tell us what's available because we don't know what's available, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like we're just all out in this field looking for the next opportunity, right? And then once it comes to us, then we say, yeah, can we get a screening link? Or, hey, we watched that movie. Or how many other theaters in Chicago are you going to play? So maybe the Gene Siskel should have that one because it's much more their curatorial style. And we'll take this other one over here. So it's very similar, but also a lot of uncertainty and sort of surprises in this new virtual cinema world because it's coming out so fast that it's really hard to say what's going to open in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. You just don't know. I know it's going to open this Friday. I can tell you right now, but I don't know what's going to open next Friday.
Well, tell us what's going to open this Friday. I mean, this should come out by the end of the week, so...
Okay, well, so for all those Tiger King fans out there, we have a ridiculous movie that you have to see to believe. It's called Roar, and it's coming from Drafthouse, it's a repertory film, but you'll be so shocked by it that you won't even really know it was done in the 70s. And then we have this other film that just got programmed called Incitement, and I don't know much about that one. Another person programmed that one. And then we're going to hold over a movie called St. Francis, which is a local Chicago-made film, our Cat Video Fest, which is just a bunch of silly cat videos.
Yes.
And you can pay what you want on that one. So, you know, whatever you're comfortable doing, considering you can watch a lot of those on YouTube anyway.
Hey, I've got a date with the Cat Video Fest later. I'm excited about it.
Oh, well, it's a good one. It really is. It's a lot of fun. Really,
those
it's good escapism.
Those are fun shows, yeah.
Absolutely. So that's what we got for this Friday. And then we're going to just wait. We're going to start asking what's available for next week. So basically, we're going to get this Friday done probably tomorrow and put out our email newsletter so everybody knows what's happening and then start on next week's program.
Cool.
Ryan, I just wanted to finally ask you here at the end. Well, I'd say that the Music Box is a cultural institution, I think, really important to people here in Chicago. I don't really know a cinephile who doesn't love seeing a movie at the Music Box. What can people do to help you guys during this strange time?
So if you want to directly help us, definitely think about, you know, purchasing a gift card so that you can use that when we reopen. Or you could buy a membership, which comes with a lot of perks. We're even doing free member movie screenings on our monthly basis through virtual cinema, as well as there's merchandise. And then, of course, like the most direct way to enjoy the Music Box, but also enjoy movies is virtual cinema. So you can be supporting us in all these ways. But I will just say that I have received a lot of, you know, just nice messaging and good, people reaching out through social media and emails. And I just want to say to anybody who's done that and maybe hasn't supported us financially because it doesn't work, thank you. It's honestly, it's like, it means like you could be having the worst damn day and you get this sweet email of somebody who has like a nice memory of what something they did at the Music Box. And it just changes out your whole outlook on the day. So even just those little gestures are amazing.
Well, Ryan, thank you so much for coming on our show and talking to us today. It was very insightful and very interesting to hear about behind the scenes at the Music Box. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Of course.
Yeah, it's good to know that, you know, we might not all be together, but everybody's soldiering on. And it's really good to hear about how indie theaters and distributors are supporting each other. That makes me feel really good.
And honestly, I just want to say, don't give up hope, guys. The movies are coming back. Movie theaters are coming back. We're going to be here when this world becomes right side up again.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us for a special bonus interview episode of Film Club. Please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
This week's episode of Film Club was hosted by me, Alex Dowd, and by Katie Reif. It was produced by Carl Blumberg, edited by Melissa Lorenz. Our sound mixer and finishing editor is Seth Hafer, and our motion graphics designer is Julie Mullins. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back next week with a new episode.